Dr. Rena here. I'm a dental specialist and founder of RW Perio, located at 75 Harley Street. Welcome to my podcast, Life and Smile, where we talk about everything dental, lifestyle, business, and much more. Every episode, I'm joined in conversation with a specialist expert in their chosen field, who give us a behind-the-scenes glimpse into their daily regime, career turning points, and an insider look at what they can't live without. As a businesswoman myself, it's so inspiring to hear how people have built their careers and shattered those glass ceilings. So let's get the conversation going. Dr. Rena, back here on Harley Street, and welcome to Life and Smile Season 4. Today I'm joined, sitting right here across from me in our recording studio, with a figure renowned for making her name in retail as the creative director of her eponymous luxury concept store, which blends fashion, lifestyle, and elements of a gallery. And that's just the start. Needing no introduction, it is, of course, Alex Eagle herself. Alex, welcome to Life and Smile and for taking the time out of your extremely busy schedule. I can't wait to learn how you make it work so effortlessly and finding out a little bit more. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So with a background in fashion media and PR, talk us through those kind of early days of starting out and sort of then how your career progressed from there.
I always knew I wanted to work in fashion and design since I was a little girl. I wanted to work at Vogue, be a fashion designer, be a photographer. It was all things around the realm of actually what I do now. So it was, you know, with that always in my mind, I was kind of always making scrapbooks and ripping out pictures from magazines and, you know, making my own magazines and selling them to my classmates.
Nice.
And drawing my friends' wedding dresses when we were teenagers.
Wow.
So I always kind of knew what I wanted to do. I went on to then study history of art, and then I got an internship in fashion. I first like assisted a stylist, and then I got a job at Sunday Times Style, and then stayed in magazines. I got a job at Sunday Times Style, then Tank Magazine, then Harper's Bazaar, before moving to Joseph and working in fashion and retail. So yeah, it kind of started because I always wanted to do it. So that was I felt quite lucky for that because everything was geared up to getting towards that goal. All the things I studied and learned and collected and spent my pocket money on were all towards this career in fashion, really.
And was it something like it was inbuilt that you just loved that? Was it something that inspired you to look into it and further?
It was really all I can remember.
Right.
I loved clothes. There was a shop on Chiswick High Road where I grew up called Fairdeal Fabrics, and I'd spend all my money, my pocket money in Fairdeal Fabrics, and then persuade someone to help me make whatever the design had in my mind. And similarly, whenever I got pocket money when I was older, I put it all together and buy like a jumper from Joseph, which was like big, thing in the 90s. So I feel like a lot of, and then my dad bought me a camera, and I think it was just always in me. I always wanted to do it, which I'm feel grateful for because all the things I learned were geared up towards getting this job.
No, it makes sense. And the kind of steps you took in terms of you were at Tank, Harper's Bazaar, Joseph, how did you know, like, how to take the next step or what to do next?
I think, you know, it was an amazing experience everywhere I worked, but it was tough. You know, the fashion industry is tough. I lived at home, which I was really lucky to be a Londoner, so I could live at home, and I waitressed, babysat, worked in shops on the weekends after work and stuff like that. So I interned for a while, which was a kind of great way to start. And then I made ends meet and got extra money from doing extra things on the side. And I worked for some amazing people. You know, you get in at 7 in the morning and you'd leave at 8 p.m., 9 p.m. And I spent most of my early years like on the floor of the fashion closet, folding up clothes, steaming them, ironing them, sending them back to PRs. And I worked for just amazing bunch of women who were very driven. And so I think their worth of ethic baked into mine. And there was this expectation for you to get in early, leave late, work really hard, work on the weekends, want to get yourself to Paris to go and see all the shows and do the appointments. And back then you'd have a camera with loads of chargers and extra memory cards,
right,
and you just like and you'd have to wear heels. I remember walking for miles around Paris with all these cameras and the heels, and I think it was just the work ethic kind of got baked into me by working for these amazing people and just wanting to see it all, having that kind of FOMO and desire to go to the shows, the appointments, be involved in everything, go to any party I was invited to, just saying yes to everything.
Yes.
I think those are my early years.
And do you think, like, for someone starting out in and wanting to do a similar thing, do you think that level of graft, that kind of saying yes to everything, is still important?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just amazing opportunities now because we've got all these platforms to broadcast, to tell your story, to do your own magazine, so to speak. Yes. You know, we didn't have that tech anymore in this ability to broadcast oneself and one's ideas and one's design. So I think we live in a great time to be able to tell a story. It's just important to find your voice that's unique to yourself in this echo chamber we live in, where a lot of things are quite cookie cutter.
Yes.
If you can find your own voice, your own style and your own unique kind of vision, I think there's a lot of opportunity for you to be able to kind of self-broadcast and tell your story. And I think that's exciting time, actually.
On that point, do you feel sometimes if you have such a unique voice, it can be quite daunting to go against the grain?
Definitely, sort of, 100%. But I think how nice if you do have a different idea, where we're all seeing the same shows, we're all seeing the same art exhibitions, we're all following similar people on Instagram. So it is difficult sometimes to think outside this kind of world we live, where we're fed the same information. So it is really important to go in search of books and references and exhibitions, or you know, maybe more permanent collections like the V&A or the National Gallery or the British Museum or museums further afield, and look at the permanent collections. So not just the things that are on trend at the moment, to go and search for things that might spark some joy, interest and inspiration in you that aren't everywhere, aren't overexposed, I think.
Such a good point. The fashion industry is obviously, as you mentioned, it's constantly kind of evolving. Do you have any personal favourite items to be involved in terms of when it comes to sourcing or designing?
I'm always looking at wardrobe staples, classic items, and elevating them. So the things that I'm always looking at is going back in through the kind of through the decades at what are kind of classic things that are timeless, that kind of stand the test of time. I look a lot at menswear, and I look a lot at kind of menswear from, you know, the 19th century as well, you know, details on menswear, inside pockets, the way that things are done up, the way that things are buttoned and closed and stuff like that. So I think I look a lot at what has standed the test of time. You know, rather than colours or fabrics or kind of really interesting, crazy designs, I'm actually refining and paring things back. So I look a lot at, like, what are the classics? Why are they classic? Are we really going to want them in our wardrobe? Are they kind of investment pieces? And then I'm always looking at fabric. So fabric really is the base of everything I do, from the furniture design to the fashion design. Fundamentally, what sets it apart is the way it's made and the fabric. So we make all of our furniture in the UK, and I make most of my clothes that I sell in my shop in my shop downstairs on the lower ground in Soho. Right. We make a lot of the tailoring there and suiting, and then the cashmere is made in London. Anything else is made in London. So it's a really British made, the designs are British made, London made, and the fabric is predominantly British as well.
Yeah, no, amazing. In terms of, we mentioned earlier about sort of the landscape changing, and also social media is a big thing now as well, which was different from, I guess, when you first ever started your career. Do you think that's had an impact on the developments of your career so far, in terms of that instant access and everyone want to be on social media channels?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. It's amazing now how you can see things so quickly. You know, it's Fashion Week at the moment.
Yes.
And normally you'd be having to go to all the shows. You'd be kind of either lucky enough to have a seat and get a view, or be at the back standing when you're super young and just desperate to kind of catch glimpses of what's happening and writing notes. And beginning my career, you really would write notes. You know, you'd maybe have your digital camera, but you would write notes of the trends that you could see. And now with social media, you can see the shows live streamed, you know, on websites. Brands can now live stream them through their websites. Then you can follow people who are there in real time showing you what's happening. And so I think that's really changed our access. We're not waiting for things to be published in magazines or newspapers. We're not even waiting for things to be on blogs. It's live. And I think the brands want everyone to see them. It's much less about the insiders and a few of the kind of industry people telling us what the trends are or what they're seeing on the shows, on the catwalks. Everyone has access, and I think that is really exciting for everyone, you know, that everyone has access to what was before quite hard to kind of get to see, wasn't it? So it's great. I mean, I think social media's been great for fashion, really.
I agree. I think it's almost like giving yourself a microphone and allowing yourself to amplify the message as well. Yeah. So you get that access to what's going on, but also, as you said, curating your own message. It's just allowing you to amplify that and let everyone hear all about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, if there's the negatives of it, if you're not saying something so great, everyone hears about it. But I think you can use social media for your advantage.
Yeah, and I think that's down to us and who we follow, and that, you know, maybe have sources as well that are, you know, it's up to us how we curate our newsfeed. You know, I think sometimes the unreliable sources or the kind of, I don't know, you don't have to follow those people. That's up to you, isn't it?
Exactly.
So it's our own curation of who we decide to follow and whose opinion we like to hear. And
I feel like a lot of people are spending time thinking about that now, whereas in the past when, you know, Instagram first arrived, you just follow everyone. And now it's actually, who do I want to listen to? Who am I going to give my headspace to, essentially? So as you said, picking I know some of my friends will spend a day like unfollowing people because they decide, actually, that's not the kind of thing I want to listen to.
The messaging, sometimes you really want, you don't need to hear kind of someone's opinion or negative. Or, you know, their aesthetics change from whatever it is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's important to curate what you're interested in looking at.
What would you say has been your proudest moment to date from everything, all the amazing things you've accomplished?
This podcast, obviously. I'm really proud of the collection. I think, you know, I've grown it really slowly because I really take a lot of time on each piece to try and make it what I think is a key piece to someone's wardrobe, because I don't believe you need to buy into trends. You don't need to buy things every season. You don't need to buy new stuff all the time. So with that slow approach, I think slowly but surely I'm building a really wonderful capsule of clothes that really you can wear and wear and wear. And now when I get it dressed in the morning, I've got pretty much all the components I need, which I'm really proud of, just from the ease of getting dressed and then seeing my husband wear the same clothes and my stepdaughter and the people when I get into my studio, they're all wearing it, and my friends. And I feel really proud of that. It's small but really important to me. I'm really proud of Oakley Court, the hotel, and my husband's, my business partner Sophie's involvement in that. It's just such a nice place to be. So I sometimes kind of pinch myself because it was so different before the pandemic, how it felt and looked up there. So that's really special place to be, and seeing my kids enjoy it, my friends enjoy it, that makes me proud. So many things make me proud. I think I'm a big self-critic. So it's important to actually sometimes take stock and be just pleased with where you are. And there's so much to do. And yes, there's so much more I want to achieve. And yes, I cringe at all the things I've done and done wrong. And, you know, but actually it's important to also be like, you know, tell the 14-year-old self that you'd be in this position to do what you love and be grateful for that and be proud of that.
And that's honestly the number of podcast guests who are, you know, super successful like yourself who have said that same thing, like it's so important to stop and appreciate where you've come, because otherwise you're going to live your whole life and you know, you just keep trying to chase the next goal but not appreciate the view of where you are now.
You're so right.
You mentioned there's things to do on your list still. What any other kind of big life and goals on your agenda?
I mean, I think I just want to do what I'm doing better. There's no huge projects. I mean, there's the Alex Eagle Sporting Club. We've opened at Oakley Court and we're going to do something in London, which I'm really excited about. I'm really excited about the whole, because what I do isn't really just fashion, it is lifestyle. I'm really excited. I'm really interested in health and wellness and well-being. And I think work with really specialists in that field, I'm really excited to curate more in that field. So in terms of like, you know, health and wellness and supplements and chances to make your life better and feel more well and even maybe lengthen your life. I think this is all incredible, and science and tech meeting kind of older practices. There's so much more information and people are sharing it. And I'm excited that I've created a space that is full of really interesting, really great people who are the top of their field. So while I'm not pretending in any way that I am able to bring these people together, that are the top of their fields and curate that and then offer a space that really, there's a lot that people can learn and feel really good from.
Yeah, for sure. And you can't forget dental in that,
because gum health is such
an important part of that wellness conversation, especially with the links with, you know, gum health and general health and just how it makes people feel. We have some people with severe gum disease, we treat them and they're just like completely different people. And I think that's, as you said, that's what it's about, making people feel better has the biggest impact on, and then that has a knock on effect.
You must feel great. You make people feel better and literally smile better all day long.
It makes a big, big difference. So no, I really, really enjoy it. Do you have like a typical kind of working week or a working day, or does it like vary?
Because
you're
varies.
Involved in so much.
I like getting up early. I try and do Pilates, make breakfast for the kids, and then I often take them to school, which means I start my day in Notting Hill and I get to walk through the park. Lovely. But I don't always, like, it depends if I've got a meeting super early. But I'm based in Soho. I live and my studio in Soho, so I tend to mainly be around there. But then I'm at 180 the Strand a lot. I go down to Oakley Court a bit. I do meetings all around London, so each day is pretty different, which is great. I just wish there were a few more days in the week.
Yeah, tell me about it. No, I mean, I guess the variety is nice though.
And really
nice. It mixes things up.
Yeah. It just makes the time whiz past.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Is there any, we always ask our guests this question, which is really interesting. Three things that you basically can't live without, or in your survival kit, whether that's at your desk or in your handbag, or what would those three things be?
Oh, really good question. I would say probiotics, a really good lip balm. I love the Hermes one. And I mean, there's so many things. I love my Charvet slippers. They bring me a lot of joy. I make this shirt that I'm wearing now, which I live in variations of it every day. Yeah. I wear that to sleep in. I wear that like open on top of a vest. I wear that tucked into jeans.
Nice.
That's probably like something I really... And I could live without all these things, but I'd rather not live without.
They make your life so much better.
And chocolate, what you should say to you.
Well, I can't disagree with you there. So, and then also, just, you know, you mentioned your busy lifestyle, every day is different. You're juggling kids, family, etc. How do you then kind of sort of switch off? Like, do you ever switch off? Or is it like ISIS? It's a lifestyle kind of approach as well to work. How do you sort of...
I switch off. I mean, I do like swimming and I do like yoga, Pilates, fencing. I like these things where you can't have your phone in your hand and you have an opponent, so you have to live in that moment for that moment. I think sports is a really good way of switching off. I do think we can sometimes be too plugged in. Not we, I certainly can be too plugged into the technology that helps me get my job done from not having to be tied to a desk. But at the same time, it's important to find a way to force yourself not to be able have to be connected. So I'm really making conscious effort to be with the kids and do their homework with them and read with them and be with them, trying not to be on my phone.
Yes.
And then these sports really help, because you can kind of meditate while you swim.
Yes.
Similarly with yoga, and then Pilates, fencing, you know, ballet classes, all these things, you kind of have to concentrate. You have to be in that moment. So that's kind of meditative and kind of...
I completely agree. I think I go skiing every year, and it's the one thing where I have to focus on the action. Otherwise, and which is great. So you're still active, but you feel refreshed after, which is really nice.
Yeah. I think actually with skiing, because you aren't on your phone all day long, you feel so well.
Yes.
As well as doing the sports and the fresh air and everything like that.
Yeah. So no, completely agree. And when you're off duty, like, are you always around in London? Are there any favourite spots you like to relax? You mentioned walking through the park, which sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Any other, like, favourite spots around town?
I've got a little cottage in Oxfordshire. Got a, it's kind of really nice nature around there. You can kind of go dunking in the river and lots of walking. And we've got like a, it's small, but a wonderful like vegetable and fruit garden. Oh, nice. And like patch and stuff. And the kids are really involved in that. So that's a really nice place to switch off because again, gardening is a really nice yes. way to like connect with the earth, which sounds so cheesy, but you know, again, you're hands free. Yeah. You've got to like, I sometimes enjoy taking pictures of the kids when they've like picked some amazing rainbow chard, but in general, you're not yeah. on your phone. You're with them. You are, you know, planting and yeah. growing and picking and kind of eating as you go. So that's really nice. So the countryside, because I live in Soho, it's really nice to get out of yeah. London.
For sure. Such an inspirational conversation. So much to learn from your journey so far. Final question. What keeps you inspired? And you know, you mentioned from the beginning, you've always been, it's been your thing to do this and, you know, you're made for it. But on a day-to-day basis, because some days can be hard and it's, you know, you wake up, you're like, gosh, I've got so much to do. But what keeps you positive and energized and, you know?
Everything inspires me. I feel like I dream in colors and patterns and fabrics. So I feel like I feel really inspired by everything. I think getting dressed in the morning and wanting to wear the clothes I make. And then with the furniture, it's constantly being inspired by how could you make that better? How could you tweak that? What could that work if it had no arms? You know, mm-hmm. I think it's the kind of desire to create utilitarian, usable, functional things, not just beautiful things. So day-to-day life inspires me really because I'm creating these things for day-to-day life. So it's quite easy to be inspired.
Brilliant. Anything we should look out for in terms of what's coming up next?
Yeah, there's loads of interesting things coming next. Look at my website, have a look. Yeah. Follow me on Instagram.
And your website for everyone
is www.alexeagle.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I know you are a super busy woman, so thanks for taking the time
out.
And I'm sure we'll see you again soon on Holly Street.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thank you.
Thank you.